The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning from Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. For those of you on Zoom, thanks to the magic of the internet and our wonderful tech team, we are also as close as your home. We're a Unitarian Universalist congregation dedicated, like Thomas Paine was, to challenging the mind, nurturing the spirit, and transforming the world. I'm Preston Lutweiler, treasurer of the Board of Trustees, and I want to personally welcome you this morning, wherever you are on your life's journey, wherever you are on your spiritual journey. Whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, we welcome you into our circle of compassion and caring. Last month's Soul Matters theme was Living Love Through the Practice of Freedom, and Reverend Andrew conducted a wonderful service last week on freedom that explored questions about the meaning of freedom and its limits and obligations. Since we just celebrated the 4th of July, we're going to continue exploring the theme of freedom. Soul Matters doesn't have themes past June, so we're just going to keep going with freedom into July. And we're going to focus on our namesake, Thomas Paine, our congregation, and our UU principles. A question raised in last week's service was, freedom from what? Freedom for whom? We'll look at those questions as they applied in the days of Thomas Paine and today. The situation's a little different. And now, I will light the chalice while Linda Weaver inspires us with her own words.
Okay, here comes the inspiration. No pressure. As we gather today, let us take a moment to honor the precious gift of freedom. Freedom to explore our beliefs, to seek truth in our own ways, and to embrace our diverse paths. May we celebrate the liberation that comes from love and understanding, allowing us to connect across differences and to support one another in our journeys. As the flame of this chalice ignites, let it symbolize our commitment to justice and compassion. Together, may we cherish and safeguard the freedoms that unite us in our shared quest for peace and meaning. And now, Preston will light the peace lamp. Please respond with the words on the screen. May peace be with us.
And with all the people of the world.
Okay, you want to introduce our gathering song?
Our gathering song, which many of you know is one of my favorites, is We'll Build a Land. And the words are by Barbara Zanotti, music by Carolyn McDade. The title and the lyrics echo a quote from Thomas Paine's Common Sense. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. This version is my favorite and has some revised words and an added verse, and it's performed by Mo Mack in concert with John and Cynthia Bowling. The lyrics will appear on the screen and you're welcome to sing along. You can stand if you would like. If you're going to stand, move to the side so that the people behind you can see the words on the screen.
We'll build a land where we bind up the broken. We'll build a land where the captives go free, where the oil of gladness dissolves all mourning. We'll build a promised land that can be. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. build a land where we bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, and we'll give them garlands instead of ashes. We'll build a land where peace is born. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream. We'll build a land where the forests are fertile, where the water and wind run clean and clear, and community matters more than possessions. Come share this land, let's build it right here. Come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, where justice shall roll down like waters, and peace like an ever-flowing stream.
One more time.
Oh, come build a land where sisters and brothers, filled with the Spirit, may then create peace, for justice shall roll.
The first part of this service is going to be about Thomas Paine and freedom then, in his time. In 18th century America, Thomas Paine wrote passionately about freedom. Freedom from the whims of a mad king, from taxation without representation, from religion imposed by the state, from wars begun and prosecuted for aggrandizement and petty feuds among monarchs who had come to power not by merit or popular support, but by heredity. In the service last February, we featured a short book, Thomas Paine and the Dangerous Word. The word was not freedom, but independence. It was included several times in Thomas Paine's pamphlet, Common Sense. Common Sense went viral in the American colonies in 1774 to 1776. And in the pamphlet, Paine wrote, In absolute governments, the king is law, but in free countries, the law is king. Paine goes to great lengths to argue against monarchy. He wrote, "There is something exceedingly ridiculous in the composition of monarchy," and proceeded to give compelling arguments against it, and particularly against hereditary monarchies, and specifically the British monarchy. Between 1776 and 1763, the American colonies had been used as pawns in something called the Seven Years' War. The war had roots in a prior war, the Austrian War of Succession, arguments over who should be the hereditary king. In the Seven Years' War, France allied with Austria, Spain, and Russia against Britain, Prussia, and Portugal. How did that involve the American colonies? Well, William Pitt was Prime Minister of Britain, and he had a strategy of seizing the entire French Empire, especially possessions in North Africa and India. So he used the Royal Navy and forces from American colonies. And one of the first shots of the war may have actually been fired by George Washington on May 28, 1754, when he led a party to attack French, building a fort at the Monongahela and Allegheny River in what is now the heart of Pittsburgh. And that fort later became Fort Pitt in honor of the guy whose strategy it was to entangle the American colonies in this ridiculous European war. In succeeding years, Britain tried to recoup the cost of the North American campaign of the Seven Years' War, which was rebranded as the French and Indian War. And they did this with taxes and other impositions on the American colonies. Well, those were not well received by the colonists. And this past Friday, we celebrated the 249th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Our congregant, Dave Perry, a Canadian, posted a little history lesson about our Declaration of Independence on Facebook on Friday. And it's worth checking out, but I won't steal his material for this service, but check it out. The Declaration of Independence is not a long document. Scholars divide it into parts. And the first part is a preamble. It's pretty short, and it's the part that we're most familiar with. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted that derive just powers from the consent of the governed. When a long train of abuses evinces despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. The bulk of the Declaration of Independence, however, is an indictment of King George III, a bill of grievances listing some 28 wrongs that have been done to the American colonies. Here are just eight of them that may resonate a little bit with us today. He, the king, has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for their tenure and their offices, and the amount of payment for their salaries. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretend legislation. Legislation for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefit of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. After independence was declared, war with Britain was on, and well, the first few months did not go so well for the colonies. In December 1776, Paine published The American Crisis, in which he wrote the famous words, "These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of his country, but he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered." Paine's writings helped inspire George Washington's colonial army onto victory, which eventually led to a new constitution. In common sense, Paine had proposed a Continental Conference to frame a Continental Charter or Charter of the United Colonies. Actually, the term United States was attributed to Paine, which is in the Constitution. In common sense, he wrote, let a crown be placed thereon, on this constitution or charter, as he called it, by which the world may know that so far as we approve of monarchy, that in America, the law is king. In an appendix to the third edition to Common Sense, Paine wrote that American independence was inevitable and could come in one of three ways: by the legal voice of the people in Congress, by military power, or by a mob. And he favored the first course. He wrote that we have every opportunity to form the noblest, purest constitution on the face of the earth. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. The birthday of a new world, he wrote, is at hand. A race of men, perhaps as numerous as all Europe contains, are to receive their portion of freedom from the events of a few months. Boy, was he optimistic. It was a war of several years. But anyway, the Constitution, ratified 13 years after the Declaration of Independence, was intended to form a more perfect union for the collective self-government of the colonies. With the appended Bill of Rights, it enumerated freedoms from many of the grievances that had been enumerated in the Declaration of Independence. However, these rights did not extend to slaves or indigenous people on whose land the new nation was created, and they did not extend to women. So the for whom part was a little bit different from what we expect today. It took 83 years and a bloody civil war for the rights and freedoms in the Constitution to be extended to Black people through the 15th Amendment. And then it took another 100 years for the 19th Amendment to allow suffrage for women. Through World War II, Unitarians and Universalists have upheld the principles of democracy and freedom against the forces of tyranny. Norbert Chopik, who started the Flower Communion Service in Hungary, continued that service through the Nazi occupation. And it cost him his life. More recently, UUs were prominent in the US civil rights movement in the 1960s, including James Reeb and Viola Liuzzo, who Linda talked about in one of our services. Our Thomas Paine UU Fellowship was founded during that time, during the civil rights movement. And we have proudly carried on the tradition of our namesake, Thomas Paine, with our actions. And now, Linda Weaver is going to talk about Thomas Paine and freedom now.
Okay. The 4th of July is the one day a year we set aside for an exuberant national celebration. It's our moment to remember the Declaration of Independence and how it advanced the cause of human freedom. It's a time to honor a truth stated plainly in its second paragraph that we are created equal. Well, as you heard from Preston, some of us were. That belief, combined with the document's clear rejection of a monarchy, forms the foundation of American democracy. But on this 4th of July, we must also confront a painful truth. What is happening to our democracy and our freedom now? We are living in perilous times for so many people. What factors are threatening our democracy? When our Constitution was ratified in 1789, it was designed to create a stable framework for our government while safeguarding individual rights and promoting public participation in the democratic process. It provided for a bicameral legislature. John, if you could bring up that slide. A Bill of Rights that guaranteed the basic fundamental rights, liberties, federalism, where the power was divided between national and state governments, an amendment process to allow for updating and adaptation as needed, and a balance of power between the three branches of government, the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. This system of checks and balances was designed to protect democracy and prevent any single branch of government from becoming too powerful. So as you'll see in this slide, the legislative branch, which is Congress, Senate, and the House of Representatives, main function was to make the laws, and their key responsibility was drafting bills, appropriating funds, and declaring war. They're the body that was supposed to be able to declare war. The executive branch consists of the president, the vice president, the cabinet, and federal agencies. And their main function is to enforce the laws. Their key responsibilities are conducting diplomacy with other nations, implementing laws, and managing national defense. And then the judicial branch, the Supreme Court and the lower federal courts, their main function was to interpret the laws. And their key responsibilities were reviewing laws for constitutionality, resolving legal disputes, and protecting individual rights. Sounds like a great plan, right? Here's what's happening. So what is happening to this blueprint for maintaining our democracy? Many people attribute the turmoil we are in today to the fact that the checks and balances are failing, and the three branches of government are not functioning as our forefathers intended. And here's why. Several Supreme Court rulings are seen by some as an attempt to expand executive powers, the power of the president, that critics perceive as authoritarianism. Here's a short list. The Supreme Court rulings on gerrymandering that have allowed partisan manipulation of electoral districts. The court's decisions on campaign finance allow greater corporate influence and creates an environment where the interests of a few outweigh the voices of the many. The dissolution of lower court rulings. Judicial appointments of extremely conservative justices have shifted the balance of the court that is more favorable to executive power. Since justices have lifetime appointments, this long-term influence will shape the court's decision for years to come. And what I consider perhaps the biggest assault to our democracy is declaring that while a president is in office, anything they do is legal and not prosecutorial after they leave office. Now, what can I say about Congress? Well, I said it all on the wall over there. We're not going to forget what you're doing in Congress, and we're not going to be quiet about it. You're abrogating your responsibilities as the people who should be making the laws to protect the people who've elected you. They're enabling the executive branch at every turn, many times to the detriment of their own constituents. The latest assault was the passage of the president's budget bill. Before I get into what the budget bill is going to do, there were Congress people who stood up and said, this bill will hurt 40% of my constituents, but I have to vote for it. 40%. Okay. Here's what the budget bill is going to do. It's increased the deficit and our national debt to a staggering amount. Cuts to essential programs will negatively affect vulnerable populations, including low-income families, children, and the elderly. The impact on healthcare, millions of people are going to lose their healthcare coverage. The environmental concerns causing potential harm to air and water quality, wildlife, and any climate change initiatives that are already undertaken. Economic inequality. This budget favors the wealthy at the expense of everyone else, not just the poor, everyone else. Uncertainty for state and local governments. There's significant reductions in the federal funding, and this uncertainty is going to lead to service cuts or increases at the state and local level. The long-term economic consequences of this budget bill. Some economists raise concerns that the combination of tax cuts and increased military spending could hinder long-term investment in crucial areas like infrastructure, education, technology, and will ultimately affect our economic growth. So, this is why I lose sleep at night. This is the state that we are in right now. But as every good educator knows, I've got to end on a positive note. So what can we do? What can we do to save our democracy? Well, first and foremost, as much as I hate it and as much as I won't listen to every newscast, I have to stay informed. Educate yourself and others about democratic principles, current events, and implications of political decisions. Reliable information is the key to understanding the challenges facing democracy. And may I add, there is as a retired educator, there is pressure being put on almost every school district across the nation to cut out classes that we used to call problems of democracy, anything to explain how the government works. There is a definite move to dumb down what we are teaching our children. So we're going to have to pick up that mantle. The second thing is engage in voting. And I see some people right here who are engaging in voting and running for office. Participate in elections at every level. There is no longer such a thing as an unimportant election. I've had people come up to the polls and say, well, I'm here even though this is an off-year election. No, the off-year elections are the people that we elect to run our local governments and our judges. Our judges, who used to be the protectors of democracy. So our voter turnouts are crucial for ensuring that elected officials reflect the will of the people. The third thing, advocate for voting rights. Support efforts to protect and expand voting rights, including measures that ensure easy access to the ballots, such as early voting, mail-in ballots, and opposing voter suppression tactics. Four, participate in local politics. And before I leave that, I just have to tell you one story I heard that to me was just so upsetting and mind-blowing. I was at a meeting of Democrats in my area, and there is a judge of election at Limerick 1 that we are going to try to have voted out in this upcoming election, who, you know, when you vote provisionally, your ballot is sealed. It's in a protected security envelope. And then when it goes to voter services, they open it up and they tally your vote. What that judge did was opened every one of the security ballots, because those provisional ballots were mostly Democratic ballots, opened them up so when they went to voter services, they could not be counted because the security was breached. That is the kind of actions that we are fighting about at the local level. So again, be involved in your local politics. Volunteer to be a poll watcher, because we wouldn't know about these things if we didn't have poll watchers that see what goes on and report it to us. The next thing is support civil society organizations. Contribute time or resources to nonprofits and community organizations that focus on protecting democratic norms, civil rights, and social justice. Number six, organize and mobilize. Join or form groups that work towards promoting democracy and civil engagement. These include grassroots organizations. Have you driven on 422 and seen any of the signs the people are holding up over the bridges? That's a form of organization and getting our message out. Practice civil discourse. Encourage open and respectful discussions about political issues, fostering an environment where diverse opinions can be expressed and debated without hostility. I'm looking at some of our Meadowood residents that are here, and they have a current events group where people can get together in a safe environment and discuss what is happening so that people can stay informed. Use social media wisely. Okay, this is probably one that I need to work on, because sometimes I go down that rabbit hole, and why do I do it? I don't know, because, you know, if someone is that entrenched in what they believe, my little response is not going to help much. So I just put laughing faces sometimes. Leverage social media platforms to raise awareness, organize events, and share reliable information while being mindful of misinformation. So I do use my social media Facebook page to post events that I know are happening in this area that might help move the needle. Educate future generations. Encourage discussions about democracy, civic responsibility, and history among younger generations to ensure they understand and value democratic processes. And we can't count on the school districts to do this. I know that because in my very own school district, I know many of those educators, and they are MAGA educators. And there are certain things they won't teach your children, and I know that. So please be aware that some of this education is going to happen at home. And finally, and I'm wrapping it up, folks, engage in peaceful protest and advocacy. Demonstrate against policies or actions that threaten democratic principles. Peaceful protests and public demonstrations can raise awareness, and it can influence public opinion. Public protests and rallies like No King's Day on June 14th, organizers estimated that, are you ready for this? 4 to 6 million people participated in more than 2,100 cities and towns, including the flagship event that was in Philadelphia. And if we can start looking at some of the slides, the first several I'll talk about. This didn't happen in just blue states. So I'm thinking, okay, it's the blue states, people are going to come out. It happened in red states as well. And here's some of the images from that day. This was a crowd shot in Philadelphia. The next shot I love, this is so Philadelphia. Philly does it, bows to nobody. And then of course, in another blue area, Chicago. Then we have Oakland, California. Ocean Beach, San Francisco. And now, I guess you can tell what's coming next. Here's Bastrop, Texas. Boise, Idaho. Dallas, Texas. Fayetteville, Arkansas. Homer, Alaska. Louisville, Kentucky. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Overland Park, Kansas. Tampa, Florida. And Warrensburg, Missouri. People are up in arms and they're fighting for their democracy. And find my last slide. A mural of the Statue of Liberty covering her face was unveiled in Roubaix, France, one day before the United States celebrated Independence Day on July 4th. This mural titled The Statue of Liberty's Silent Protest was created by Dutch artist Judith Deleu. She chose the city of Roubaix because it has a large migrant population and many of them live in extremely difficult circumstances. Roubaix is a city shaped by generations of immigration, first from Belgium, later from North Africa, and more recently from the Middle East. Many residents know the fear of family members being denied visas or the uncertainty of temporary permits. And here's a quote from her. The values that the statue once stood for, freedom, hope, the right to be yourself, have been lost for many, she said. Delu went on to say, Lady Liberty no longer stands proud. She was meant to welcome the stranger, the refugee, the outcast. Today, she can only watch what's happening and turn away in shame. Delu chose Roubaix also, not Paris or Marseille, because as she put it, this is a city built by those who arrive with nothing, looking for a place to belong. The location itself, a half-abandoned warehouse that's slated for demolition in the coming years, adds an extra layer. Nothing lasts forever, she said, not even the image of liberty, if we don't protect what she stands for. If this image makes people angry, she said, they have to ask why. And now we'll have matters of the heart.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Alex Dooley. I'm here on behalf of the CARE team today. And as many of you know, we spend a little bit of time each service to set aside some time to share our joys and our sorrows as a community. Reflecting back on this service, I think that it's really important to take a moment to process information in community and be there for each other and remember that we need to show up as our whole selves to be there for each other in the ways that we can and celebrate the joys when we can. So if you are so moved, please come up to the microphone and start with your name and share your joys and your sorrows. If you are on Zoom, you can raise your physical or virtual hand and John will unmute you. Thank you.
And while you're gathering your thoughts, we're going to have a short musical interlude. This is written and performed by Isaac Strader, and then we'll begin with Matters of the Heart once this has completed. Bring our time of sharing to a close. We're going to sing Spirit of Life. This version is performed by the First Parish Brewster from Massachusetts, and the lyrics will be in the video.
Spirit of love, come unto me, sing in my heart.
in the form of a meditation. So if you feel comfortable, get comfy in your seat, close your eyes or soften your gaze. Take a moment to stretch out any parts of you that feel like they might need a little love. You can take a deep breath. One more for fun. Feel your feet on the ground, connecting you to the earth. Feel yourself supported by your seat. Take a moment with another deep breath to settle in. Turn your gaze inward. Is there anything tense within your body? Can you feel any flutters or stiffness? Just take a moment to put your attention on that spot. Send it some love. Are there any thoughts that have been racing today that you haven't had a moment away from? Maybe you can take a moment to let it go just for a minute. Just see the value of being with yourself in stillness. Whenever you're ready, you can move your neck around, open your eyes, and return to your day. Thank you.
So, in closing, 43 countries around the world still have monarchs of some form. Many today are more figureheads than despots. This year, when Canada and Greenland were threatened with a trade war and possible invasion or purchase under the threat of invasion, the kings of England and Denmark stood as protectors of these countries' freedom and independence. So the problem today is less with kings and more with autocrats who aspire to be absolute monarchs, or emperors, or czars, or führers, or dear leaders. When they attack vulnerable people, show no compassion in human relations, undermine or squash the democratic process, obstruct the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, or wield religion or economic power against the powerless, we as UUs must stand up for our UU principles. Our first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Our second principle is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Our fourth principle is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Our fifth principle is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. Our sixth principle is the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Now Linda Weaver will read words from Reverend Odette Fulbright Folsom while I extinguish the chalice.
You notice they don't put me in charge of fire anymore. With good reason. This reading is called "We Are Not Done." Do not think we are finished. Oh no. We will never be finished, never just done. Until the light of justice is lit behind every eye, we have come to take back the world that is the inheritance of better children, better lovers, better days.
We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of independence, democracy, and justice that will carry us, that we will carry with us into the world. And now, our closing song. Thank you, you're a very good extinguisher. Our closing song is If I Had a Hammer, performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And then I'm going to do announcements, so I'll hang out up here, Preston.
Love.